I'm Katie.
And I'm Bryce.
And you're listening to... You're listening to episode 9 of Food Fight. On this episode, we talk to Ben Kramer, who's the executive chef of Diversity Foods. Diversity Foods is a food system on the U of W campus. That's the University of Winnipeg. They have the Elements Cafe, which is where we sat down to talk to Ben, and that's open to the public at the Richardson College, as well as a couple of cafeterias inside the University of Winnipeg. You might remember Ben Kramer from our Stone Soup episode. He's been pretty active around the city of Winnipeg. He helped open up Dandelion Eatery, which is in Organza Market. It's now closed, but he's also working on some menu planning right now for Folk Fest. That's a music festival that happens just outside of Winnipeg in the summertime. So we had a nice chat with Ben. He told us all about his background, how he started cooking when he was young and went to cooking school. And one of the things that he focuses on with Diversity Foods is having fresh local ingredients in the restaurant as much as possible. So he takes care to source his ingredients locally, and he's influenced a lot of other food services and restaurants and chefs around the city to do the same, because the people that he's been sourcing from have started reaching out to other companies as well. His menu at Diversity Foods offers quite a few different options. They have a lot of vegetarian options. He grew up vegetarian himself. He eats meat now. It kind of started when he went to cooking school and he started learning more about meat and learning how to cook it. But he truly believes that you should know where your food is coming from, and just as important as knowing where your fruits and your vegetables and your wine and beer is coming from, so should you know about your meat, and it should be managed properly. So he starts telling us a little bit about his history.
I've been cooking my whole life. So I grew up around food. My parents were into food. They cooked a lot at home. We had a garden in our yard. Everything at home was made from scratch. Instead of going to Disneyland as a kid, we went to the south of France and did wine tours. So I've kind of been surrounded by food my whole life. And when I started working, it was just kind of a natural fit. And I was a bit... of a troubled youth, and was, you know, told I had to get a job for legal reasons, and started in the restaurant business, and that's sort of a natural fit for misfits, and decided to get serious about it and went to school, and I've been cooking ever since.
Where'd you go to school?
In Vancouver. I grew up in Vancouver. I did my training in Vancouver. I worked there for a number of years before coming here.
Why Winnipeg?
Chasing a woman.
Of course.
Kind of a common theme I found here in Winnipeg. I think there's actually a subsidy for people to leave the province and bring back spouses in order to get more cooks.
So I know that you've been fairly active in other restaurants around the city, specifically Dandelion Eatery. Maybe you want to tell us a bit about that?
I've been in Winnipeg since 2000. My background coming from BC was always kind of fresh, local, organic. When I came here, there wasn't a lot of that going on. There was a few chefs kind of dabbling in the local food scene, but there wasn't nearly as many as there are now. So Dandelion Eatery sort of started as a joint venture with Organza Market that were retailing local organic goods. So when they expanded and opened their bigger shop at Confusion Corner, was kind of a natural fit. So we partnered up and tried to bring local healthy food to the masses.
Where was the process to getting, you know, your own place here to where you are now at Elements?
Well, kind of a long story, but Dandelion, I ran that for about just over four years. And due to number of circumstances, leases and expansions and stuff, it was kind of working its way to a close. The university approached me to do some consulting about this project that they had an idea for, that ended up being Diversity Foods. So they had some of the worst food services in Canada. They just opened a new residence next door, so they had a bunch of kids living here full time, and realized that they weren't actually selling food. And they had to provide food for these kids. So they were kind of tasked with how are we going to do this? So they brought me and a woman named Kirsten Godbu on board. She kind of did the front of the house stuff. I did the kitchen stuff. And we worked on a business plan with the UWCRC and Seed Winnipeg in the North End. And kind of batted around some ideas and put together a business plan about, is it possible to do local from scratch food and in an institutional level? It had never been done in Canada before. So we did a business plan and put some stuff together on paper and had a whole bunch of kind of ridiculous goals and made it work. And I got a nice consulting check and went back to work. And a couple months later, they said, hey, we're going to do this. Do you want the job? So it was kind of a natural progression for me to jump all over it.
So what kind of challenges then do you encounter, I guess, coming up with all this local produce and food for Elements and elsewhere?
Yeah, we have, what do we got? We got 4 locations on campus. So we run the main cafeteria, the big one, a little one on the 4th floor, a coffee shop, this restaurant, Elements. We do an enormous amount of catering around the city. As well as a grocery line that we retail at a Vita Health and Crampton's Market. So we got lots on the go. So the advantage of that is that we're big-ish, and we have a lot of purchasing power. So I'm able to not only help farms grow locally in terms of guaranteeing them a certain volume, which makes it less risky for them to maybe put up a second greenhouse or plant extra this year, you know, because I can pretty much guarantee that I'm going to buy a lot of their stuff. So there's not really as many challenges as it seems. I think the biggest challenge we have is systems. I mean, once you have a good system in place, the rest kind of becomes clockwork. You know, I've had very little issue sourcing what I need locally. I've been here 14 years now, so I've developed a huge network of producers and farmers who have kind of grown with me, and now, you know, there's a bunch of people doing local stuff, so it's been a slow enough grow that it's not a, you know, I need you to go from 0 to 60 overnight. It's been this really nice progression of growth, and, you know, most of the guys that I'm buying from, I've been buying from for years, you know, so we communicate every year, and we look at my, you know, my usage from last year to this year, and we pick crops together, and then they, you know, so it sounds ridiculous, but it's actually not that hard if you're organized.
So is everything here in the restaurant then local, or
no,
the most?
Not in Manitoba, that's impossible. We say we do what we can. Our first choice is always local. If we can't, you know, obviously if we can't do it, then we got to look elsewhere. One of the things we try and do is look at everything kind of big picture. So we look at our packaging and, you know, go with compostable. We look at our water usage. We look at recycling. We look at, you know, where our wine and beer is coming from. Like, so we kind of look at it. It's more than just food. We do this kind of holistic view on everything we do. But, you know, in the dead of winter, we still got to serve food. But one of the things we've started to do, now that we've got a few years under our belt and kind of a handle on what we're doing, is, you know, the instinct is I can get, you know, tomatoes locally for a certain chunk of the year, and then I have to go elsewhere for the rest of the year. So we do as much canning and preserving as we can, but one of the things we're looking at is, do we need to use those products in the winter, you know? Granted, in this market, you kind of have to. We could, you know, otherwise we'd just be eating beef and potatoes all winter and nothing else. But we started looking at things like a tomato, for instance, fresh tomato on your burger. What is the purpose of it? You know, when you actually look at it, because the tomatoes are terrible in the winter. You know, the ones you're getting from Mexico or California or wherever. So we started looking at, what does the tomato do on the burger? Well, it adds acidity. It adds, you know, that acidity that cuts the fattiness of the burger. So we started breaking all that stuff down and thought, okay, well, in the summer, can we make a product with a tomato that we can preserve to do the same thing? So rather than have a fresh slice of a terrible tomato on your burger in the winter, maybe it could be a tomato chutney or a tomato jam or that kind of thing. So we're always trying to figure out how to work within this ridiculous seasons that we have here in the prairies.
Yeah, so obviously, I guess you face a lot of challenges based on seasonality and geography. And maybe you've kind of just touched on this, but have you been modifying or updating your menus with the seasons? I mean, this is kind of probably you'd have to.
Yeah, at the restaurant, we change it less often. We change it several times a year. You know, we're looking at 3 or 4 times a year. The cafeteria menu, we change every 2 weeks. Lots of that just has to do with the fact that we're feeding the same people for most of the year, and, you know, they get bored really quick. And we, as cooks, get bored. So, yeah, we do those changes for other reasons, but when we do the changes, we're obviously taking the seasons into account. Now that the sun's out and it's starting to slowly get a little bit warmer, you know, the food's getting a little bit lighter, and as new products are coming into us, you know, we change way more frequently.
When you were talking about the burger and the tomato and different ways the tomato affects the burger and how it's going to taste, there's clearly a lot more thought that goes into it besides just, is this food in season?
Yeah.
Right? So what other modifications have you made to different menu items to fit with the seasons in the way that you did with the chutney?
Well, we take that approach with everything. I mean, I'm lucky enough that we've developed a really great core crew here. The majority of the senior management that you know are kind of under my wing are all seasoned restaurant cooks. They're not your typical, you know, lunch lady, institutional, mass produce. You know, so we all have that small restaurant mindset. We're just, you know, rather than feeding a 60 seat restaurant, we got 12,000 people on campus, but it's the same headspace that we're in, and I try and keep everybody in that headspace and not to get wrapped up in the mass production volume. That's all we're thinking about. We're still thinking about things the way we would in a small restaurant. So seasonality always comes into play. Taste comes into play, and for me, the seasonality of food and the sourcing locally, you know, is more than just, you know, the ethical argument. It tastes better, and as cooks, really, at the end of the day, we're just trying to make food that tastes good, that people like. And if I can source something locally that's going to taste infinitely better than something picked underripe from somewhere else and shipped here and stored in warehouse, all those things, that's just common sense. We're just lucky enough that we can apply that.
It sounds like you have an interesting dynamic then with that kind of mindset. But clearly a larger operation than, say, other people that are trying to do the similar things as you. And I spoke with a friend that works at the Folk Fest the other day, and they tell me that you're going to be heavily involved in the catering this year for volunteers. Is that right?
Yeah, we got the contract for all the backstage food. So we're serving, like, it's 5,000 meals 3 times a day for all the volunteers and performers and everybody involved. So we're running that kitchen as well as first year doing a booth out front selling to the public. So we're trying to do both at the same time, because that's kind of what we do, is if we're going to do something, let's do it all in and not dabble in it.
How do you find staff for such a huge undertaking? I mean,
luckily Folk Fest is established and it's volunteer run. So we're really responsible for the menu planning, the recipe development, the sourcing, the purchasing, but they have an existing volunteer crew that actually does all the hard work. And it's the same, you know, not the same every year, but more or less the same every year. You know, many of the volunteers have been there since, you know, the second or third Folk Fest. They've been doing it their entire life. So those guys are, you know, the real workhorses of that kitchen. You know, my job is really just to plan a menu and plan it out for them and let them give.
Where are you in the process of developing that menu in particular? Is that what you're working on?
Right now, actually, right when you guys showed up. We've kind of got the rough skeleton of the menu drawn up. We've had a number of meetings with the crew chiefs that manage the crews at Folk Fest, and they've been doing it for years and years. So we sat down and tried to be as collaborative as we could about it, and you know, got their feedback of what worked over the years, what hasn't worked, what was popular, what was difficult, and kind of took all that and roughed up a menu. And we're going to go back to them with sort of a blueprint and say, here's what we're thinking, does this make sense? Because, you know, they've been doing it for years. This is our first year. I mean, I've helped out, but this is our first year actually doing it, so I don't want to pretend I know what I'm doing.
When we saw you at Stone Soup and you had the Manitoba pho, and there was elk in it, and I remember asking you about the meat, and you said, well, it's happy elk. But I know this is a place that has lots of different vegetarian options, so, like, how do you feel about eating meat and providing meat?
Well, I grew up vegetarian. Most people wouldn't believe that. I grew up vegetarian. My sister's a hardcore vegan. She's got vegan cookbooks and has a little vegan empire. So I'm very familiar with the vegetarian vegan side of things. When I went to cooking school and decided to get serious about cooking, part of that was meat, and I kind of forced myself into eating meat and understanding it and the process. And I was lucky enough in that history of growing up in BC of only really working for chefs that were doing what I do. I never had a chain job. I didn't work at McDonald's. I didn't, you know, work at an Earl's. I didn't have any of that background that a lot of cooks have when they first started out. So I was really, really lucky that I wasn't exposed to that until much, much later. So it's kind of ingrained in me that that's just the way you do things. As far as meat goes, I'm a fan. But no different than my produce, no different than my wine. I want to know where it's coming from and how it's managed. And for me, you know, the proper management of an animal is just as important as, you know, buying a wine or a coffee that's, you know, either fair trade or direct trade. Like it all comes into play with everything, whether it's produce, wine, beer, meat, kind of all the same principles come into play. And without, you know, pulling out a list of all our criteria, it basically boils down to, are you doing the right thing? And that's kind of how we look at it. And that's how we decide who we buy from. And we're lucky enough being here that we've got the kind of volume and the kind of buying power that we can now influence bigger suppliers to purchase that way. Because as a little guy, if, you know, for instance, when I moved here, coming from BC, seafood was a big thing for me. And ethical seafood, not, you know, killing the ocean and overfishing and all of that. So there was nobody here. There's a number of fish suppliers here, but nobody was really sourcing that way. And when I first moved here, and I was like, okay, I'm looking for line caught this, you know, or whatever. Wasn't available. They could bring it in, but it wasn't worth it because I was a little guy in a little restaurant, and, you know, my 10 pounds a week wasn't worth it to them. And I've been pushing and pushing and growing over the years, and now if you want my seafood business, which is enormous, hey, guess what? This is still the only kind of seafood I'm going to buy. So now they're sourcing it, which is great. But that's also opened up the market now for all the little guys who normally, like me, couldn't get it. It's now available because they're bringing it in anyway. I'm big enough that I can buy, you know, enough to make it worth their time. So now these suppliers, if they're bringing it in anyway, they want to sell as much as they can. So now they're going door-to-door peddling, you know, ocean-wise fish to all the other restaurants in the city.
In talking to other chefs around the city, have you noticed sort of a shift in more people wanting to buy local? And
Yeah, I think so. I mean, lots of it comes down to economics. You know, as romantic as the restaurant business is, it's a really tough business to make money in. But the number of restaurants and the number of chefs that I know in the city that give a shit now. Sorry.
that's mild.
Okay, give a shit now. Seems to have changed, you know, in the last 10 years. And same with the consumers. The consumers are demanding it now. I mean, as a business owner, your job is to adapt to your clientele, or a smart business owner would. So if your clientele's now asking, you know, where's that fish from? What farm's that pork from? Is it pasture raised? You either have to react or kind of isolate yourself to be a different kind of operator, right? So I think it's a combination of the chefs caring, but also the consumers and demanding more.
What are some of the foods, I mean, coming from the West Coast, that you've learned are, I guess, some of the more select foods in Winnipeg? It's things that you can get, maybe not in Winnipeg, but near Winnipeg, in Manitoba, or somewhat nearby that you wouldn't associate with, say, being out west?
Yeah, good question. I think it's pretty much it's not that different. I mean, the difference with the West Coast is you can get most of it year-round. Obviously, the seafood's a different scene, but, I mean, it's 2014. I can get something shipped in from anywhere overnight almost. So that has changed things a lot. But, I mean, we're in the prairies, right? So it's lots of meat. I can get meat year-round, potatoes, carrots, onions year-round, storage crops, that kind of thing. There's a number of greenhouses now that have extended the seasons. Obviously, they can't necessarily afford to heat them through the winter, and I don't even know if that makes a lot of sense just economically or, you know, the amount of fuel being used to heat the greenhouses. But it's extended the season enough that it's not this short window anymore. It's, you know, almost half the year, which I think is fantastic.
There's clearly a lot of other considerations besides just, can we grow this year-round? Like you said, the fuel to run the greenhouses, that also harms the environment in some way too, right?
So yeah, we can do anything. Should we is the question, I think. You know, there's never an issue of can we do this? Because there's, you know, nowadays there's very little that we can't do, but most of the time we don't take a step back and think, should we do that?
You're a chef in a restaurant. This is a university restaurant, so what kind of hours do you keep, and like what's that like having such a large business organization?
Well, I'm in actually the best position I've probably been in my life career-wise with my hours. I used to work chef's hours, which are every holiday, every evening, every weekend, you know, 15, 16 hours a day. And now that we've grown to this point, I don't need to. So I manage a number of other chefs. I'm a lot less hands-on in the kitchen than I used to be. So for instance, Elements here, which is open to the public, Aaron Epp, who I've been working with for, I think we figured out that it's like 11 years now at various restaurants, he runs this kitchen, and I kind of just manage the operations side of things. You know, we do menu development together and kind of higher level stuff together, but he's, you know, day to day in the kitchen managing his staff. Kelly Catani does the same thing on main campus for us. So I got a really solid team, which allows me to work regular hours for the first time in my life.
You know, this is quite a different job than maybe you've been in the past. Like, yeah. What are some of the pros and cons to being more, you know, directly in running the food in the restaurant, working with the food all the time, versus like being a little bit more large scale? Which do you prefer and why?
I don't have a preference. I like them both. They're both different challenges. I spent most of my life on the line working in the kitchen, you know, all the time. I miss it almost every day. But I'm also glad I'm in a position where I can now, you know, let other people do that and challenge myself in different ways. I think I'm actually probably in the best position I've ever been in, because now I'm lucky enough that I don't have to stand online 6 days a week for 15 hours, but when there's an event that's really exciting or a stone soup kind of thing, I can go do that. So it's now kind of more by choice than by necessity, which is a great spot to be. But I mean, yeah, do I wish I was cooking more? Yeah, if the only thing I could do was cook all day, I'd be happy. But I'm extremely happy doing the work I'm doing, and you know, it's great for people who have been working with me for a number of years, because as things grow and as I move up, they do too. So, you know, Aaron was my sous chef for years, and he now is the chef at Elements, right? So it's I think it's great for everybody involved.
I follow you on Instagram, and I often see like posts about, you know, growing plants in your windowsill and like different kind of taco night stuff like that you do for kids. You're clearly having a lot of creativity at home too. And
oh yeah, even when I was working on my days off, I'd cook at home. Like, it's, I'll never not cook. I'll never not be involved in food. Currently, I'm, you know, I do a lot of catering. I do a lot of the private gigs, but I get to teach, and I get to train, and I get to try and keep the younger cooks that are coming up through our kitchen excited about food and understanding where their food comes from, and you know, trying to instill, you know, a lot of the ethical and the moral side of cooking not just the technique, you know. So I think it's a great position to be in, you know, hopefully influencing the next generation of cooks. You know, cooking's a young man's game. It takes a lot out of you.
So on that note, why should the general public, people that don't necessarily normally find themselves on the University of Winnipeg campus, why should they come check out Elements?
Because our food's great. Tastes great. I mean, at the end of the day, we're serving food. And if it's tasty and it's reasonably priced, then, you know, that's the ultimate goal. The, you know, behind the scenes stuff is really for the people that are interested in that. We walk this very fine line of trying not to be preachy. You know, it's good food first, it's good service first, and that's what's important to us. Oh, and by the way, we're doing all this other stuff, you know, for those that are interested. Because, you know, like it or not everybody cares. You know, some people just want a good sandwich or a good burger, or, you know, and they have very little interest in where their food comes from or why that's important, and that's great. Come and eat. Enjoy the food. But if you want to know, then, you know, then we'll take you on that walk and we'll educate you a little bit further.
What should I get to eat today?
What do you feel like?
I'm easy. I'll pretty much eat anything.
We sell a ton of ramen soup. It's one of the more popular things on the menu. Yeah.
That's a university student's staple.
Absolutely. So we took that and we, you know, we do it from scratch. So if you get it with pork, it's pasteurized pork. You know, we make our own stock. It's not full of powdered random stuff. And, you know, so I mean, we especially on main campus, we do a lot of traditional food. We just, you know, make it ourselves. You know, when we moved in here, we didn't want to say fries were bad, don't eat burgers, because we don't think that, you know. But let's hand chip organic potatoes and cook them in oil that's not trans fat. You know, it's still fries at the end of the day, but it's going to taste better and you'll feel better eating it.
That sounds like my kind of food, fries and...
Ben treated us to a really delicious lunch. I had the veggie mushroom almond burger. And the way that they do their burgers is you pick your patty and then you pick the type of burger that you want. So I picked that patty and I picked the angry burger. So it was full of jalapenos and it was really, really spicy, but it was really delicious. And Bryce had the chicken burger with melted bacon and cheese on top. If you want to learn more about Elements Cafe, you can like them on Facebook or you can go visit them at 599 Portage Avenue. That's in the University of Winnipeg. They're open Monday to Friday from 11 to 8 p.m. and Saturday, Sunday, and holidays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Don't forget to tune in next time to Food Fight on 101.5 UMFM at 6 p.m. on Friday evenings. You can also listen to all the past episodes of Food Fight on umfm.com or on katieskitchen.ca. I'm Katie.
And I'm Bryce.
And you're listening to...